We know that no one can succeed alone. Since the Second World War, more than 120,000 Norwegian women and men have served shoulder to shoulder with friends and allied forces. They have participated in almost 100 missions, fighting for values on which we build our societies. A bridge of trust has been built between our brothers in arms and our allied countries. Some soldiers did not make it home, and many suffered injuries. A few have been honored as war heroes. None should be forgotten.
Welcome to Friends and Allies from the project Et Øyeblikk, En Evighet. We are talking about the good friendship Norwegian soldiers are enjoying with our allies around the world. And today we are in Breda, in Holland, Netherlands. And with me today I have Peter Tau. And we could do this in Norwegian, actually, Peter. Det hadde vært fint.
Stemmer. Vi kunne gjennomføre det helt på norsk.
But as a courtesy to our listeners who are not fluently in Norwegian, we'll continue in English. That would be better. Peter, what's your role in the Netherlands Army right now?
Well, welcome into Breda, Tom. Let me start with that. And for the listeners, it's very important to distinguish between the Netherlands and Holland. So you're now in the Netherlands, but you're not in Holland. Breda is in northern Brabant. That's one of our provinces, but that's a detail only for the experts. No, Tom. At this moment, I'm serving in the Dutch Army as a colonel, and I'm the commanding officer of our language school. And the language school is part of the Dutch Defense Academy, military university, and I'm responsible for all language training. In initial education, which means for the officers and the NCOs, but also for interpreter operations, products that my interpreters translate, and for all kind of language courses for people we send abroad, and as well in preparation of their deployments. So if we, at this moment, we have Dutch continuing participating in Interflex, and the Dutch soldiers who educate the Ukrainian soldiers, they need to have some basic English skills. Not everybody has it, but we can help them with that.
When did you start in the army? Did you always wanted to be in the army, or how did you get into it?
I started in the previous century. I started in 1983, not 2000, but 1983. So I've been in the army now for 41 years, and there are people in this room who are not that old yet. And now I consider myself an old gray man. I started as a conscript. I was a non-commissioned officer in a recce unit. I loved it. I liked it. While I was serving, I applied for officer education. And a couple of months later, I started my officer education. And here I am, still in uniform.
Never looked back?
No, I wouldn't change it. If I had the opportunity, I would do it again.
You have been deployed several times. Can you remember the first time?
Yeah, the first time is still very present in my in my being. My first deployment was in 1994 to Bosnia. That was during the war. I served as a military observer, United Nations military observer in Sarajevo, where I lived for 6 months. And that was a very hectic period. We've seen those pictures on television in front of on Sniper Alley, in front of the Holiday Inn Hotel and everything that happened in Sarajevo. And I was part of that. But I look at it. I look back at it very positively. Although I've been in challenging situations, it has made me a better human being, and specifically a much better officer. I've become very critical. I think one of my drivers is to have the work as good as possible in order to save lives. So in 1994, as I said, was my first deployment. I've served three more missions in Bosnia. So altogether, I spent 3.5 years. One of them was a year in all kind of positions in Bosnia. I've been, like all Dutch officers, I think I can say that, also deployed to Afghanistan in the task force we had in the south. I was chief operations and chief plans. Interesting as well, differently, because Bosnia is so close by. And I've been deployed for 1 year to Tampa, Florida, where together with Americans, I worked as an officer planning activities against ISIS, Daesh in Syria and in Iraq.
Looking back, which deployment have had most impact on you? Do you have a moment that you will never forget from one of those missions?
Yeah, that's definitely my time as a military observer in 94 in Bosnia. So in one of the events, I was in that mission for five and a half months, and an UNMO team is a international team. We were with seven. None of them had the same nationality as somebody else. So there were seven different nationalities in the team. And after 5.5 months, and the deployment was six, so 2 months before my end of mission, in the team where we lived, in the house we lived with civilians, we got a phone call that close by, a ambulance driver was shot in the stomach. He was next to his ambulance. And we were tasked to go out and help him. So I went out together with my Nigerian colleague. And the drill was, if you take the car keys, I take the radio. So I took the car keys, he took the radio. And after a couple of minutes drive, it was not that far away, we found the ambulance. And indeed, the driver was sitting next to the car. And he was shot in the stomach. And the shooting came from a ridge. Snipers from, I think, 600-700 meters were shooting at him. There was snow, and they were also warning us, but we didn't recognize, at least I didn't recognize it, because the shooting happened in the snow. So when we came on the spot, we got out, trying to help the ambulance driver, and because my Nigerian colleague, he had the radio, he was shot. And I had to change my mission, because I was no longer focusing on the ambulance driver, but more on my buddy taking him out. So we took him out, and he was shot in the hand. They shot the radio out of his hand. That was why this radio was so important. So I was able to get him out and drove him to the nearest Danish hospital, Koy. It was close to the headquarters. Delivered him, drove back, and together with the support of the French, we were able to stop the fire and get the ambulance driver out anyway. But that was, for me, that was my bubble of... The first 5.5 months were more like a story. And then suddenly this bubble of the story bursted. Because in the months before, we were so often in circumstances that you would later on think, how is it possible that we got out? Yeah, we were in buildings that were shot at with anti-tank guns. There was more sniping, there were mortars, artillery relatively close by. And we lived, nothing happened. But then when it came so close by that my buddy was... my partner was shot. That was kind of that bursted the bubble. So that was, I think that really had a huge impact on me. It made me a better man, better officer.
I can imagine. We are talking about allies, and you have been to Norway. You have a very strong connection with the Norwegian military. How do you find that alliance, that friendship going?
Well, I think I was deployed to Norway 3 times. So out of my 42 years in the armed forces, I spent 19 years abroad and 13 of them in Norway. So my first assignment, and that's how I was connected to Norway, was I worked in the army staff, and we had Panzerhaubitze 2000 artillery, too many. We bought them in a time that the Dutch army was bigger than it was when the Panzerhaubitzes finally came. So I was tasked by my colonel to find a partner who would like to buy our Panzerhaubitzes. And in that search, I came in contact with a Norwegian colleague. He invited me to discuss this matter further in detail. And we came to the conclusion that not only did we have Panzerhaubitzes that Norway was interested in those days, but Norway had also much material that we were interested in, like the Ligue 1 bridge layer, as a modern material. And all in all, we had sort of a material package of 250 million euros, and Norway had something almost similar. So instead of buying it, selling it from each other, we tried to work out a package in which we would give it to each other. Yeah, we would just trade it. That would save everybody a lot of money, and you had the material that you would like to have anyway. And the secondary effect was that when we had the same material, we could have our logistics tuned up, we could have common education possibilities, and we could even come to Norway, or you could come to the Netherlands, and without taking your material, because we would have the same material. That was the whole idea behind it. In order to make it work, we would also exchange officers. So I'm now talking about 2003. In those days, we had 7 Dutch officers as exchange officers in Norway. I was the first of them. And something similar with Norwegian officers in the Netherlands. I think there were 5 working. One in ISTAR, one in the engineer environment, one with artillery, one in education, and one with more generic parts, that's generic subjects in the army staff. But the day before this contract package deal was signed, Christian Groenevold decided to buy a 5th Norwegian frigate. And the 5th frigate cost that, if I recall it correctly, about 80 million euros. And those 80 million euros were needed to fill up this package deal because we needed also a breaching tank. And that was the only thing that was missing from the Norwegian side. You were considering buying it, but it needed 80 million euros. And instead of investing it in this package deal, your minister of those days decided to buy the 5th frigate. And that took the bottom out of our package deal. So the package deal was never signed, but the exchange officers were already in place. So I started in January 2004 in Linderud, where Tredok, led by Robert Mood, was located. Tredok, a part of the current day's army staff, more or less. And we were still cooperating, but not with the intensity and the volume that we considered when we started the package deal. Because I was an exchange officer, I had to speak Norwegian. So before my deployment, I studied Norwegian in Germany, at the German Bundessprachamt. So that was also very interesting. So I was in the classroom with a German teacher, and he was really German, in a way, German teach. And the second student was a German non-commissioned officer who was not interested at all. So I was there was no room to escape. I was always in the main effort of this German teacher. But it helped me. The morning from 8 to 11:30-ish, we had classes. The afternoon was homework. And then 7 o'clock, you fell asleep because you were completely exhausted. So I came to Norway and Linderud in the beginning of 2004. I thought my Norwegian was very good, which it wasn't. Because then suddenly you start speaking about military Norwegian instead of generic Norwegian. And I continued my Norwegian language lessons every Wednesday in the center of Oslo in a company called, it was a civilian company where I continued my Elysium, I think it was. And so I spoke Norwegian. What helped me a lot is that I was also able to play ice hockey again in Bærum with the Jutul. So in my office work, I spoke military Norwegian. And in the dressing room, I spoke real Norwegian because of the jokes. And so I think I integrated very quick thanks to the hockey team as well. So that was my first deployment. After this rotation, 2.5-3 years in Tradok, I was sent to Afghanistan 1 year approximately, spent a year as a chief operations in one of our brigades. And then suddenly somebody realized, hey, Theo, he speaks Norwegian. We need a defense attaché. And I was kindly sent back in 2009 as the defense attaché for the Netherlands at the embassy in Oslo, which I did for 5 years. So very interesting as well, because I think I've seen more of Norway thanks to the Norwegian Armed Forces inviting the attachés to all events. So I've been at Spitsbergen, I've been in Jan Mayen, I've been underwater, followed the Russian-Norwegian border. I've seen lots of Norwegian snow thanks to that.
How is the cooperation between Norway and her allies, and particularly in the Netherlands? Does it go as well as the impression is?
Well, from what I've seen, experienced, yes. And I think one of the fundamentals of this cooperation is that we have the same sense of humor. We have the same sense of humor. We don't have the same food, but we have the same sense of humor. And that brings us very close together. Both our colleagues from both sides, we speak good English. We are capable officers. We are flexible. We are innovative. So I think it has never been difficult for me to work with Norwegian officers, especially because of the creativity, the responsibility that is given to Norwegian officers as well at the lowest level.
How important is the education aspect of the military life? Because now you are head of a part of the military education system here in Netherlands. Do you find it really important, or just a part of the system?
No, I think at our military universities, Forsvarshøyskole, Dutch Defense Academy, we're filling a niche. So you can have a master degree at a civilian university. You don't have to come to us. But if you come and have your master at a military university, you have become a specialist in this niche, in the aspect of military operations, military logistic techniques. That's something you cannot be taught somewhere else. And secondary, and that differs us even more from a civilian master, is the fact that we focus on character building. Yeah, so surviving in snow, taking responsibility, coping with disappointments. Yeah, you don't know when the exercise is over. Living in a forest. Those are aspects that I group as a sort of a character building. And from that aspect, if you look at what happens in Kriegsschule, it's almost the same what happens here at KMA, Koninklijke Militaire Academie, which is the equivalent of Kriegsschule. Although at KMA, the Dutch equivalent, we have also the education for military police, which is a special service in the Netherlands, for Air Force and Army. We have a special school like you have for Navy officers. Yours is in Bergen and ours is in Den Helder. The system is the same, but they need different material to exercise, to work with.
I was thinking that you also cooperate with other nations, not only Norway, but how integrated are the Dutch military with other allies?
That's a good question, Tom. So I think if you talk about cooperation or integration, the Dutch armed forces are leading Europe. So already for, I think it's about more than 15 years, we have almost integrated Navy with Belgium. So we decided to specialize on different aspects. So we take care of everything that's related to frigates. And the Belgians, they take care of everything that's related to mine-clearing vessels. So if you call the Navy headquarters, it can easily happen that a Belgian officer answers the telephone. I hear it because of his accent, but we're completely integrated and still able to conduct operations on our own. We do not need a Belgian authority to conduct mine-clearing operations, although our mine-clearing vessels are in Belgium. Another example is that together with Luxembourg, although it's a small country, Belgium, we take care of each other's airspace. So it's not like in the old days that you have three times two F-16s stand by. No, now we have two F-35s standing by, and we take care of the Belgium and the Luxembourg airspace. And a month later, it's Belgium F-16s because they don't have the F-35 yet. It will come. So I think that's also an example of enhanced cooperation. From the army side, I'm not saying it's Christian Grondevold's fault, but we've chosen to go into the direction of Germany. The Dutch brigades are part of German divisions. In the German division staff, we have Dutch officers who are able to speak fluently German. Yeah, that is my responsibility in the job I have now. On the Air Force side, we are working with U.S. material mainly. F-35s, Hercules, or other air transport vehicles, more focused on the United States. But even in that area, you see, we work very close in the F-35 community in bigger exercises. We fly next to Norwegians. Our Marines, our Navy, participated heavily in cold response for many years, and this year in what is called Steadfast Defender. Yeah, so our amphibious capacity is integrated together with UK and amphibious landing force, and the regional command, Combined Joint Task Force Norfolk, their big elements of their amphibious landing capacity is Dutch. We have the big LPDs, landing platform dogs, with Dutch Marines on board. And we are exercising as we speak in Norway. Isn't it Willemsen with Willemsen Governmental Services who has hired the previous or the former submarine logistical base in, what's it called? Help me, Tom.
It's north of Tromsø.
Of Tromsø that we are commonly using, and we come from that amphibious capacity point of view. We need Norwegian snow to train. we need Norwegians now.
But this winter we have plenty. So yeah, as you told me, the integration between the, not only with the military, but also with the military-civilian aspect is very, very present in many lands, many countries. Do you have a similarity here?
I think the integration of other departments in this, in the protection of Norway, you are more an example for us in that perspective. So we have not come that far. The threat from Russia is, from a Dutch perspective, still a little bit further away. It is one of your neighbors. It's not ours. So when I lived in Norway, every 2 years I got a pamphlet that warned me again that I had to have a couple of bottles of water in the house, batteries, firewood, and so on. We have not seen that here in the Netherlands. So you're an example from that perspective. I think you call it, there's a specific Norwegian word for it.
We call it civil beredskap.
Akkurat, yeah, beredskap. We are not that far yet. But back to operations. So the Dutch-Norwegian Army Corporation, that was the ambition was higher in 2003, still has a positive aspect, because we are together in many operations. Yeah, we have been together in the EU battle group for many times. We are now standing next to each other in Lithuania, in enhanced forward presence. So you could say, from that perspective, also the army is sort of preferred partner. We've been together in Mali, where we had a huge experiment in the mainly in the intel world with the ISTAR concept and the dedicated sensors. So I think we've been beneficial to each other's developments.
How was it to be a foreign military person in a civilian Norwegian society?
I think I only felt that in the first months of my first employment, when I started at Tradok, because my Norwegian wasn't so good in 2004. But the more my Norwegian language became, the better I felt myself integrated. And if I look at my second deployment, when I was defense attaché, I lived in Surkedalen. The neighbors are still good friends of us. We're still in contact. We see each other every year. The guys I played ice hockey with in Bærum, I've had my best hockey lives with those guys. It is completely different than in the Netherlands. You take much more care of your buddies. It's more equal. I played with millionaires and plumbers. And in the hockey world, you didn't feel the difference. I've met people during my three postings in the Netherlands, because my last one was, I've mentioned it, it was in Stavanger at the Joint Warfare Center, where I was deployed for 5 years, so altogether, 3 with Linderud, 5 as attaché, and 5 in Stavanger, 13 years. It has had a huge influence on my thinking, on my life. And I've met people who are very special, like the Lusgaard family. We see each other more often on Facebook than in real life, but they are there. If we need each other, we know how to find each other. And whilst one last aspect to mention, my postings in Norway has also brought me my wife. Yeah, if I don't speak Norwegian at home, I don't get any food. We speak Norwegian at home, although my wife is not from Norway, but we met in Norway. She was studying there. And Mala and I, we speak, we have our own secret language when we go shopping. Nobody hears what we're saying.
That's very nice. That's a very nice aspect of serving in Norway to bring home maybe the greatest trophy of all, your wife.
A package. I came back with a package. Yes.
That's cool. I have to say, thank you very much, Peter, for sharing with us your story and your thoughts about friends and allies. And thank you very much for your service and for your dedication to what you do.
Thank you very much for being here, Tom. And it was also very great. I'm very grateful that you were able to bring back all those memories that I have about Norway.
In Friends and Allies, we hear the stories of some of our closest supporters, reliving with them some of their most intense moments. Et øyeblikk, en evighet.